Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Waz Waz.
We gotta give a special shout out to George Pfau, who gave us a donation.
Oh wow, hey George, thanks.
Thank you. That's so amazing. Much. Shout out to George Pfau. Oh,
what should we do with it?
With the money?
Yeah.
I don't know, we gotta start paying people to contribute to the show again. If you have a contribution you'd like to make to the show, give us an email, not a call, a very formal email to congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. I remember now, Maysoon, the art thing I did. I forgot, and now I remembered. I went to the International Art Museum of America.
What? Your favorite place ever in the world.
It was exactly the same as the last time we went there. I'll have a link in the underworld to the episode where we talk about it. I believe it's episode 18, The Treasure Room.
I don't think we should ever show that. Play the episode again.
Why? Because we got our cease and desist letter from Loretta Huang. Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think about that place after all this time? Still your fave?
I love it. It's so weird. It truly is still extremely weird. I took a friend with me who had never been there before, and he was impressed by just the sheer oddity of it.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, thumbs up all the way, way up.
Are there any thumbs down?
In the world?
Just in general.
Like things I've seen that I didn't like?
That you were like, this is a definite thumbs down.
Like, what's the worst show I've ever seen?
This kind of leads back to my comment about how I feel like you could almost basically talk me into liking anything.
Yeah, same.
You know, like if you feel passionately about something and are able to give me a good argument.
Yeah, same here.
I probably pretty easily turned.
Maysoon, my mind is like gelatin. I could be in a cult. I could start working at the IAMA, you know?
Well, if they pay you, you might as well.
I'm starting to feel the draw. You know what I mean? I give thumbs down to like basically the whole Fisher collection.
Oh, the whole Fisher collection?
Fuck that.
There's some good work in there. It's a little
Agnes
bit.
Agnes Martin I like. And I like Anselm Kiefer in the old Fisher collection.
How about Richter?
I just don't like how it's all up there. It's all blasting and it's like we could be using this room for something else.
Okay, but saying you don't like the Fisher collection means you don't like any of the artists in their collection.
No.
Not that you don't like the collection in the museum.
Maysoon.
Just be clear about what you're saying.
You can like Crosby. You can
be clear about what you're saying. We've discussed clarity before. Okay. Maysoon. Pretend like you're writing a statement.
Okay, here's the real.
What would you really say here?
I would say that you cannot like Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, but still like Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young separately.
What? That is true, actually. I will give you that.
Thank you.
But they're all musicians. The Fishers aren't musicians. The Fishers are collectors. So to compare the collectors and the artists.
What are you talking? Look,
it's a different story. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, the three of them are musicians. They also happen to.
Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young is four people.
The five of them are musicians. The four of them are musicians together in their band group and also individually in their individual person group.
All right.
The Fishers, I'm not done. The Fishers are a wealthy collector, right?
Entity.
They own lots of things.
Maysoon is doing a lot of hand gestures. It looks like you're building a snowman.
All I'm saying is that the Fishers aren't artists. They're not a collective of artists.
Look, here's the thumbs down show. The show I give a thumbs down to is the Fisher Collection show. All of them, except for Agnes Martin's little alcove at the SF MoMA.
Okay.
Let's talk to Shannon about it.
Shannon doesn't give a fuck about SF MoMA.
I guess that's all the art
I guess there's lots of exhibitions that I see where I'm like, I just don't understand this work. And then that kind of makes me, feeling sort of like.
Sometimes it takes more than just, you know, the go into the exhibition to really understand it all.
I know. It's true.
Got to do some independent research after.
Mm-hmm.
Get a PhD, do a dissertation.
You have to get a dissertation.
Spend your whole lifetime understanding.
Yeah, then you're pretty much in it. You like it. You're into it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Then you're so close to it, it's not about like or
can
don't
we get,
like.
Can we get a listener to do a little review of the Lynn Hirschman Leeson show for us? Anyone out there?
Ooh, yeah, we'll pay for that.
Pay for it. We'll pay for it.
Ooh, I got a show coming up I'm excited about.
Are you in it? You got a show? Or there's a show coming up?
A show that I would like to see. Bonanza's got a show coming up at Interface.
That's
a lot
them.
Of nepotism because they're my friends and I work at Interface, but I'm still excited for the show.
I'm excited about anything they do at this point.
Anything Bonanza does?
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah, me. Soon they're going to be like really excited to hear
I
that.
I loved their video at
You're
SOX.
You're a hard nut to crack.
Well, I just think it took me a second to get to like
wrap your head around it.
Well, just like I kept missing their fashion shows and just wasn't like on the train uh-huh. with everyone else.
Yeah, get on the train.
I was like at the depot waving bye as the train took off. Bye.
Taking the Bonanza train.
But after
now you're
that,
in first class.
Well, I don't need to be first class.
Now you're in the sleeper car.
I'm in fucking coach people.
Now you're in the Pullman car.
I'm with the people.
We're out here at Real Time and Space in beautiful Chinatown, Oakland, talking to performance artist, fact checker, doula, Sophia Cleary. We don't usually talk to people from outside the Bay Area, but we have talked to people here for residencies before, so this falls within our jurisdiction of things that we have allowed ourselves to do on the show.
It's an honor and a privilege.
Good.
So, are you really a doula?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Let's talk first and foremost about that.
Okay, yeah, I know all about that.
I mean, can you explain to the listeners if they don't know what a doula is?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a doula is basically an emotional support person who is like a lay person. They're not medically trained. So, but they are trained in terms of like helping with pain management. Or we get training in terms of, you know, like how to deal with people who have trauma or like mm-hmm. how to help people create a birth plan or how to navigate between hospitals and your mm-hmm. client and partners and other children and stuff like that. So primarily the role is to support the laboring person while they're having their baby and before having their baby too. You know, like prepping them for the experience. And after the baby comes too, postpartum doulas are like their own thing though. And I don't have training in that.
But, did it make you feel differently about like having kids yourself sometime?
Made me really want to have a baby, like just go through the process of pregnancy and birth. But I don't want kids. So that's kind of hard.
But
maybe I can be a surrogate.
But you might carry someone's kid.
Yeah, I'm open to it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Good to know.
That's a good segue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can segue. It's fine.
Into your, you told me about your like your show, your one person show.
Oh, my
your emerging artist.
Oh yeah, one woman show, as they call it.
I don't know.
I know. I hate it, but it's what it is. No, I agree. Is it pejorative? No idea.
I don't know.
I call it that, like making fun of myself.
Okay,
but it is what it is. So,
but anyhow. So you like played audio of your own birth?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah. So I discovered that my dad had recorded a sound file of my mom in labor. And my dad like used to record a lot of stuff, you know, and I don't know if he still does, honestly, but he's kept like, you know, those like little mini cassettes for answering machines mm-hmm. back in the day. He has like a whole
God, that's amazing.
Of them. And he'll send me like weird voice messages that I send him or just like recordings of me as a kid, like on my birthday or something, which is kind of amazing. But it's also creepy a little bit because, you know, that like, for instance, the way that it's creepy to me is like I was talking to my mom about the labor recording and she was like, oh, yeah. And like your father, like the Christmas after you were born or like some holiday, she was like, he played it at the dinner table in front of our whole family, his whole family. And like she hadn't even known that he had recorded it. And it was like this surprise. And it's like, yeah. So it was like completely non-consensual, like recording, which I'm just like, OK, that is so wrong and bizarre. But as a performance artist, I'll take it. So that's what I did. So I have the cassette. I actually have it with me. I like bring it with me everywhere because I'm scared of losing it. Where do I use it in the show? I use it at the very end of the show. So the show is called Emerging Artist, and it's about being born as an artist and like how you kind of die when that happens too, because you're suddenly defined. You know what I mean? So I was kind of thinking about like as language begins to define you and decipher you, and as you become more legible, there's also a limiting in that process and a kind of like oppressive feeling that that can have. It's like, oh, I can't just be like whatever I want now. Now I'm an artist, capital A or whatever. But at the same time, we or I want to be legible in that way, of course, to professionalize and, you know, share my work and have opportunities. So throughout that show, I basically also start with the premise that I'm going to not perform the whole time. So I'm like, here's my show, but like, I'm not performing. So I just
say that explicitly.
Yeah. And but then it's like this kind of joke because it's impossible and we're in a theater. Like, it's just like this kind of constant like problem of the piece. And it's sort of a quasi like artist lecture where I like where I appropriate Jordan Wolfson's artwork. Do you know that sculptor? He's like this artist or sculptor. I don't even know if you can call him that. Whatever. He's famous. And I like use one of his works that was at David Zwirner Gallery, and I like say that it's me. I say that I'm basically one of his sculptures. I talk about that. And then I talk about some of Jay DeFeo's artwork.
Oh, hell yeah.
I talk about the rose.
She's from the Bay Area.
Yeah. And yep. I talk about like her kind of agonizing over that piece for as long as she did, and then how they had to literally dismantle her apartment in San Francisco to birth this object. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of talking about that as a metaphor. And then I play my mom, the recording of my mother giving birth to me at the end, and then I'm sobbing because I can't not. So that's kind of like a cool thing, like of not performing on stage, because I'm like really having this affect, and then it's over. Yeah. So it was amazing when my parents came to that show, actually, because that was super cathartic for me.
Mm-hmm. You're also in a band.
I'm in a band. I'm a drummer. Penis. Mm-hmm. I'm in a band called Penis.
It's a feminist punk band.
Yes, with my best friend, Samara Davis. It's our way to make our rage into something, I want to say beautiful, but it's not. Or like, that's very subjective. So.
One thing Maysoon and I also like to ask artists that collaborate is if you have any good collaborating advice, because for us, it's a constant struggle.
Yeah.
Collaborations?
We are locked in mortal combat at all times.
I used to think with collaboration that the only way for it to succeed is that there has to be like a defined role that like it's actually someone else's project. You know, I'm like, I love collaborating as long as like it's either your project or my project, because at the end of the day, I want you to feel comfortable with my executive decisions, or I'm totally open to your executive decisions. But with Penis, it's not that way, and it's hard. I mean, yeah, I know, it's funny. But we definitely, from the beginning, we have like worked really hard to define the dynamic of our collaboration as that which is like open and supportive and not about like fame or money or competition or anything like that. So once it starts to like veer that way or something, one of us is checking in being like, hey, this feels really weird and wrong and like I think you're doing something fucked up, or like this is uncomfortable, or like let's not do this because it might put us into that kind of dynamic.
Yeah,
I want to get down to brass tacks.
Okay,
good. Do you think I pee too much during the
Jesus
day?
Jesus Christ. I literally haven't even noticed.
Okay, good.
So no.
I feel very self-conscious because your studio is up
Everyone can hear you.
And you can see down anytime I leave my studio.
Oh, no, I'm not paying attention.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
It makes me extremely self-conscious.
Yeah, now you've basically announced yourself to everyone, Kate.
So it seems like maybe you need this type of attention.
When I was doing a residency.
I think you just count out three.
You're also a fact checker for Us Weekly.
I am.
Is that
Do
right?
you talk about that?
Yeah. I can talk about it.
In your creative life?
No, but I want to, actually. especially now that I'm thinking a lot about fake news. And
I feel like that would incorporate well into a performance somehow, maybe.
Totally. Yeah. And whenever I like give my spiel to people too, like I'm a fact checker at Us Weekly, that is such a punchline like in itself for so many people. So it would be interesting to do something with that.
Mm-hmm. Do they treat you well there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually really like my job.
Do you have advice for young performance artists or people teaching young performance artists?
Yeah, Kate needs that.
Is this your uh-huh. Okay. My advice for young performance artists, let me think.
Or people that are really scared to perform and have performance anxiety, but for whatever reason get sucked into it anyway and have no way of getting out of it.
Well, also you. I actually think people need more spaces and opportunities to try out performing, and there aren't any. Basically, and unless it's school. I used to run this workshop in New York City called Rehearsal, which I ran for 5 years, which was basically a platform for people to perform. Like, and then what I would do, it would be like, you know, you would bring material, work, you know, ostensibly works in progress material, nothing finalized because I had no resources. It wasn't like a stage or anything. It was usually just a studio somewhere and like some clip lights. And so 30 minutes of material max, and then we would do like an hour and a half of feedback with based on like the Liz Lerman critical response process, which I would moderate. And so that was something that I wanted to offer the New York performance community because I had just gotten out of a graduate program where I felt like as a young performer, I didn't have that. It was amazing because like some people would perform who had never once performed in their lives and would do like the most amazing, bizarre, truly smart, fucking amazing work. And then they would like never perform again or they would keep performing or whatever. I mean, so my advice to like young performers is to seek out those types of platforms or create them for themselves if they can, because you're not going to be able to like try out your ideas alone. You know, you need an audience. Yeah. I feel it's so important to have an audience and so important to have people like responding to your work. And even just the feeling of being in front of people, it's just so different. When I would rehearse like alone in a theater, it's like, who cares? Yeah. I like wouldn't even do it. Yeah. I'm just like so lazy. I don't have any of the energy to do it for a chair. So so that's what the advice I would give to burgeoning performance artists. As for instructors, I'm really invested in a certain type of feedback process. As I mentioned, the Liz Lerman critical response process. I just think, and this isn't even like, I guess this is for instructors in general, not even for instructors of performance people, but create a feedback space and or a critique space that's like actually giving and generous and is helping artists get excited about what they're doing rather than destroying their soul and like contributing to this culture of kind of like scarcity and like lack of abundance and like, oh, I better be amazing or I better just give up now, you know, because otherwise you don't grow or like make mistakes or make bad work. And, you know, I'm still making bad work and you need to do that to get to where you want to be. So
that's good advice. Yeah. I think that goes for any.
Yeah. Right.
All of it.
Yeah.
The Liz Lerman critical response process.
Yeah.
Is that easily, I mean, what are some like key sort of values, I guess?
Yeah. So it's basically the key value is that it's like artist centered, which I guess in my process, I kind of depart from that a little bit to think about the audience and the feedbacker as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's four steps. And the first step is statements of meaning. So the audience gives popcorn feedback about what they saw. And it's supposed to not really be like opinionated. It's not it's not supposed to be like, I liked that.
Right.
You know, which is just so empty and weird. It's supposed to be like, I was really surprised when you took off your cape and then smashed a mirror or whatever, you know, because it reminded me of this like horror movie I once saw, you know, trying to sort of give it context.
Yeah.
And then so the artist isn't allowed to talk during that part, which a lot of times I've worked with artists who are like, I want to respond to everything. And it's like, no, like be quiet.
Yeah, just listen.
And then the second step is questions from the artist. So the artist will be like, you know, did the Hawaiian shirt signify paradise or whatever, you know? And then the responders are like, no, or yes, or they can respond with opinions if it's in direct response to the question.
The question, uh-huh.
And then the third step is questions from the audience. And that's the trickiest part because Liz Lerman talks about it in terms of neutral questions, which always like pisses everyone off because of course there is no neutrality, but for the sake of this experience, it's about asking questions that don't have opinions couched in them. So her example is always like, if you like hated that one part was so long or something, and you want to be like, why was that part with you rolling on the ground so long? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to reformulate your question so that it's basically for the artist. So you would ask like, what role does duration play in the rolling around part?
Mm-hmm.
For you, yeah. You know, or like just framing it differently so that they're not defensive.
Right.
And then if you really have a burning opinion, in the fourth step, it's called permissioned opinions, which I love because it's like all about consent. So you're like, I have an opinion about when you were rolling around on the ground. Would you like to hear it? And you have to say that. And then the artist can say yes. And then you say, that was so long, you know, like that was crazy for me. Don't do it or whatever. And but if that part was just like an afterthought for the artist and they're not thinking about it, they can be like, no, I don't want to hear it.
I love
that.
So
they can choose, you know, yeah. Which I just feel like is so empowering and great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That was really long-winded. Sorry.
No, I loved
that
it
was
all.
Great.
No, okay. It was really good to hear all of that, actually.
I was talking to a performance artist recently who feels like because of like the conversation around consent recently that she can't do certain things in her performance that she used to be able to do, like go and touch the audience and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because when she's working with like younger people that, it, you know, people will be like, hey, you didn't have my consent. I don't know. Have you like been feeling that in performance world?
I mean, I haven't personally, but that's a really tricky thing because I think like as audience, we go to these types of things with the kind of like, there's an agreement, right? That like, especially if you're, I mean, you hopefully you know what you're going to, like right. A little bit.
Right.
And you know, so I think there's like a little bit of an agreement, like anything could happen. Anything could happen that, you know, this person might spray water in my face or like I might get walked on or something like that, but also that you can leave at any moment. I think audience members are scared to leave, and yeah, I don't think that think they so should can. Be. I think you can leave whenever you want. Please actually go if you're not enjoying it. I really feel that. Don't subject yourself to something if you're not feeling it. It's just like so puritanical to like sit through a thing, like go away. It's fine. You know, do you. But I do think that there are some artists who are pushing that boundary on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Bless them. I don't know. That's their question. I'm hoping at least that if that's what artists are doing, that that's part of what their question is about the work, and that they're not just doing it like gratuitously, not just like touching people just to freak people out, but that's part of the, you know, like that consent is part of the question of their work or something. That would like make it more valuable to me. There's also artists who are like, you know, come up on stage if you want to. Yeah. And then there's that moment of consent. But you also kind of feel it out, right? It's like you come up to a person and then if you like put your hand on their leg and they're like, no, don't, then you don't. And then you go to someone else. I don't know.
Kate and I were talking about this last week. For some reason I've come across the situation where many arts organizations in San Francisco specifically, and I just haven't asked places in Oakland, are very squeamish about bodily fluids in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I get being careful or like wanting to know more, but just sort of, I've gotten like, not for me, but for other artists I've been working with, like just really direct, like no, like not even like a discussion or a conversation. And that's just been interesting.
Totally.
Can be surprising.
I mean, in that piece, Emerging Artist, that I was talking about, there's a part where I dance and I pee my pants while I'm dancing. And there were a few venues as I was like working on that show that were like, absolutely not. Or they were like, can you do it on a tarp or like in a basin or something? And I'm like, no, like what? Like you don't just like as though that wouldn't add any yeah. other meaning to the piece. It's like, how dare you? But
at least they entertained the possibility of something else totally. Versus just being like, pee, no.
Totally. But done. For me, I was like, pee is literally benign. Like it's sterile. Liquid, like it's fine, yeah. you know, it's not, you know, it's not cum, you know, or whatever. Right. But I mean, I'm even kind of like on the side of like all of that stuff is so benign, but of course it's not. But yeah. I just think we need to make space. I think we need to make space for artists who are doing that kind of stuff.
Definitely. I think there are spaces, but I think they're very, instead of, I feel like there used to be more sort of visual art spaces that were like very experimental, mm-hmm. like who are open to more of these kinds of like, we don't know where this is going. Mm-hmm. Let's try it out. Let's support this artist. They're, you know, we mm-hmm. value them or their work or whatever. And now it feels like the spaces where that would be, I can only really think of one space and it's like very much a performance art space, like a dance mm-hmm. performance specific, not visual.
It's interesting to think about like the hierarchy of fluids or something too, like mm-hmm. in talking about it, you know? Because
almost, I feel like everywhere will let you cry.
Right. And it's like, is it just all fluids or like, is blood the most dangerous or is like vomit. Semen dangerous? Like vomit?
Blood and vomit were
like,
the two.
Or like poop. Can I not poop? Or, you know, I don't know. So
we also have a recurring segment on the show called The Bay versus LA.
Oh, yeah.
The Bay versus LA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Our arch nemesis. Uh-huh. But
we haven't done it in like a year.
You've lived in LA for about a year, right?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
So, I honestly, I think I like the Bay more.
Oh!
Woo! Yeah. Awesome. I always argue for the Bay and Maysoon always argues for LA. Yeah.
And I've only been here for a month. And I had never been here before. Aww,
that's
so
sweet.
I'm definitely having my romance. And I didn't, you know, the thing is I didn't feel like I could have my romance in LA because it's like I knew so many people there, whereas I think what's really helping my romance here is that I literally know no one. So mm-hmm. it's like the world is my oyster, you know, and I'm just exploring and doing my own thing. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, they're different. I do like LA, camping in Malibu, Leo Carrillo State Park.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I always think of Malibu as like just beaches.
Love the food in LA.
They do have good food down there.
Love all of the dogs everywhere.
We've got good dogs in the Bay. Anyhow, my real hidden agenda to get you on the show was because we have a lot of like Dina Beard and like other people who could like put you in somewhere to do a performance here in the Bay Area. They need to come and get you.
Cool.
Do you want to give your phone number? Or your contact info?
Yeah.
Your website? We'll put a link in the underworld.
Yeah, my website is sophiacleary.com, and then it has my email on there.
Yeah.
And, oh, also penistheband.com.
I love that.
And my doula friend and I are working on our doula website.
Is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
Yes. So something I would like to mention this week that we know of, at least 7 trans women have been killed since the beginning of 2017. And I just want to read their names. And my apologies if I'm pronouncing these names wrong. Ciara McElveen, China Doll Dupree, Misha Caldwell, Jamie Lee Wounded Arrow, JoJo Stryker, Jaquarius Holland, and Kiki Collier. These are all women of color, most of whom are Black. So I just want to say Black trans lives matter, and also quickly just sort of do a shout out to translifeline.org. Their phone number is 877-565-8860, and the website is translifeline.org. And they're a nonprofit dedicated to the well-being of transgender people. They have a hotline staffed by transgender people for transgender people. And their volunteers are ready to respond to whatever support needs members of the community might have. So I just wanted to put that out there because it's been a rough year and I'm thinking about trans folks.
And we'll put a link in the underworld. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. And as always,
Congratulations.
Okay. Hey, did you get some sleep?
Sure did.
Good job.
I feel well rested.
Well rested.
Okay. Give us a call, 419-351-6606, or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. You can send us an email, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Don't forget we got that Facebook page.
What?
I wish people would kind of get on there and like have a little...
Maybe we should do Instagram instead. Facebook sucks balls.
I'm not putting one more social media thing you together for this it, fucking though. Podcast.
You love it.
From the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Side Castle.